Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
All of This Life. That's the record company. Good to see you, Chris.
Thanks for having me down.
We were talking to Chris. I was talking to Chris off the air, and he just played Kimmel recently. He was there the night Martin Short and Steve Martin. Steve Martin. So, good night.
That was a great night.
You missed Kardashian.
We did miss Kardashian, but you were fortunate enough to pick up the slack on that. You know what was really cool about that night? Cool for me. I know you get to see these people all the time. Was actually getting to meet Jimmy for the first time after the show. And he was just, it was like probably the perfect time to meet him because he was so stoked for having met Steve Martin and Martin Short. And he'd never had, I think he had never had Steve Martin on.
So
he was like really fired up. So, you expect when you meet somebody of that nature off the air that it's going to be a nice, maybe a pleasant, like, hello, thanks for coming. He like sat there and talked to us for like a good 15 minutes. So he was telling us about Steve Martin and how much he looked up to him. And I just thought it was just a really classy thing for him to take the time to like sit there with us and talk to us like that. So I want to acknowledge that on the airwaves.
Thanks, Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve.
I'm trying to think of who the perennial all-star alive that is role models. Steve Martin's definitely up there with the comedians for sure. I'm trying to think of who's higher up.
Seinfeld's got to be getting there by now with all the younger generation.
Here's the Seinfeld problem. He is a stand-up, essentially. Like, he's known for stand-up. Steve Martin gets he does the plays and the movies and the stuff. I think Seinfeld is an idol to the stand-ups, and I'm sure Jimmy appreciates Seinfeld, but Jimmy's not a stand-up. So for him, it's Steve Martin, SNL and all that business. I don't know who's higher up alive on that Mount Rushmore.
For a very specific, Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy conquered, one of the few guys who conquered sketch comedy, stand-up comedy, and acting.
But he's a weirdo.
Maybe he is.
Yeah, I don't see. It's weird. I don't know
how. Biggest star in the world at one point.
I agree. It's just anyone I talk to in the comedy realm, it's the reverence. It's not a science. It's not like, did you do stand-up or did you do movies or how many Grammys or how many Emmys or how many Oscars? There's just sort of a thing.
Probably and for Bill some Cosby reason, until recently.
What do you mean until recently? So Martin's everyone's comedy out. You have music idols?
Oh yeah. I mean, most of my idols are unfortunately passed.
Steve Martin
away.
Plays a banjo. Could be Steve Martin.
I love Steve Martin on a banjo. No, I mean, your normal rock and roll guys, your Hendrixes and Muddy Waters is a big one for me. All the blues guys from Chicago, all the early Detroit stuff, the Stooges. I love the Stones. Greatest rock and roll band of all time, the Stones. Greatest band of all time, the Beatles. Just kind of going from there.
You have two categories.
Yeah, well, I kind of been, I had that talk with my dad. My dad grew up in that era where you either liked the Stones or the Beatles. You didn't kind of like both of them. And my mom was a Beatle maniac, and my dad was a Stones guy. So I kind of had to come up with a way to acknowledge both.
Them both.
Yeah.
Mine would have just been announcing I'm gay and moving next door. That's the way I feel about my parents. But I feel like, trying to think, what's your favorite Stone song?
I mean, my favorite Stone song is like, I think it probably would have to be, if I had to pluck one, would be Let It Bleed.
Mm-hmm.
And a side A. I've never had an experience where it's been late at night and that track gets played and it's a bad decision. You know what I mean?
Well, hear a little of that. I think mine would be Bitch.
I love that song.
Yeah, the thing with me and the Stones is I have it at The Who and then The Stones, yeah, sure. Because I have too many Stones songs that annoy me.
Oh, yeah?
when they've gotten to their disco kind of 80s thing, oh, sure. I got bothered by Shatter too much or something like that. But the 70s Stones.
70s and the 60s. Brian and the Jones 60s. Stones. Those are great.
So, I should say that the band, by the way, you can get the record or whatever we're calling it these days, download it. It's available now on all music streaming platforms and at Amazon as well. You can bookmark us and click on through. And the recordcompany.net is where you can find it as well. Shows coming up. One of them is at the Harley Davidson Museum in Milwaukee. How's that work?
Well, I grew up in Wisconsin, so it's kind of like a going back home thing. And then Harley has every 5 years they have a party in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, to celebrate their bikes. And they started, I think, with the 95th, and then they decided to do it every 5 years. So this would be, the fourth one. And they asked us to come down and play it. So I'm stoked, man. It's always great to go back to Milwaukee, go back home, and see all those folks, because I live out here now. So out here in LA. So,
you moved out because your wife's job, is that correct?
Yeah, she got a job at the LA Times, and it was one of those things where I was playing music in the Midwest, and I was like teaching music and doing all that stuff. I kind of was at the point where I'd given up on the idea of this as a career. You know, I kind of had looked the death of my dream in the eye and kind of
accepted it.
You know, I had never accepted it. I will say I never accepted it because I was irrational and I was stupid and I didn't know, I didn't really think about how things worked. But then when she got, I was kind of running out of road, you know what I mean? And then she got this job offer and I said to her, well, I'm not going to stand in the way of that. You know, we had been together since college and she'd definitely gone through a lot. So we moved out here, and I said, well, if we're going to move out to L.A., I'm going to go for it again.
Did you – I want to get your thoughts on this. I wouldn't mind getting everyone's thoughts on this.
What's it like to be a rock star? Well, let me tell you.
the dream. I feel like people are a little specific with their dreams sometimes.
Absolutely.
And they go, I want to sell a million records by the time I'm 25, or I want to be a millionaire by the time, whatever, and – I had a comedy dream, but my parameters were much looser.
That's a good way to go.
And I was just like, I would like to be doing something in the creative field by the time I'm 30. Not be on TV or be a syndicated radio show host. I was just like, I want to be in this field doing something, which would have worked for segment producer for Jimmy Kimmel Live or something, which obviously didn't exist. But I think if you take your objective and you say, well, not a professional touring act making millions of dollars, but just making a living in the music industry.
That was what my goal
was. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. That was my goal. That was my goal. And it's tough to get over those first couple of humps because, you know, you have to be self-reliant. You have to do all the work. Growing up, I grew up on a farm, and it actually was great training for being in a band, because on a farm, a farmer's got to be everything. You know, you've got to be the veterinarian, the carpenter, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, electrician, horticulturalist. In the band, when you're first starting, you've got to be able to do all the promotion, I would imagine starting out in comedy. You know, you've got to get your name out there. You've got to hone your act. You've got to get your skills together, and you got to make no money and still make money somehow. So,
you lose money at the beginning.
You lose tons of money.
You pay for free. You play for free and then you perform for free, but you have to get there and be there and two drink minimums and all that, you know, stuff, flyers and whatever.
No question.
I want to know, I'll post it to everybody.
All right.
I'll tease it. Who do you know who has a talent in a chosen field, whether it's fine woodworking or music or comedy, producing, whatever, they have a talent and they didn't flush it all away with drugs and, you know, just being out of control and self-destructive and whatever, and then they pursued this thing with some diligence and it just never worked out. Now I don't answer, I don't mean gifted at something, I just mean, hey, they got a decent sense of humor, or they got a decent musical ear, or they got a decent whatever. And they went at it in a sort of sober and responsible way, And 20 years went by, and they're still working at the Pottery Barn, and it just not working. Let's try to really break that down, because there's a lot of talk about, well, the haves and the have-nots, and what your daddy does, and what you get a chance to do, or what you don't get a chance to do. But I'm going to try to think of the people that were good, possess some ability. Because, look, the reality is whether it's comedy or music, if you don't have any ability, then stay the fuck home. Like, there's enough people waiting in line at the open mic nights at the club. We don't need you.
Stay the fuck home. There will be no audience for
you. We do not need you there. But let's all kind of think about that scenario. Brian, you can't use yourself as an example.
God damn it. Not any more time. I'll go last.
And I'll tell you about LegalZoom. Here's a fact. Most Americans don't have a will. 20 years ago, you had to find a trustworthy attorney and pay them by the hour. These days, no excuse. Do everything a la carte. It's easy. Plug and play at LegalZoom. More than a million people have used LegalZoom for their estate planning needs. It's national. Make a will month at LegalZoom.com. So now it's your turn. Let's be responsible. Let's make it easy. You don't need the big billable hours and the big law firms. You just go to LegalZoom, and you don't know which one is right for you. Good. LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys will advise you on what's best for you and your family. Plus, LegalZoom's not a law firm, so you'll never pay those hourly billable rates. It is the best. It is LegalZoom, right, Dawson?
Make things a lot easier on your family when you're gone. Check out LegalZoom's Last Will and Living Trust Estate Plans now during National Make-A-Will Month at LegalZoom.com. And for special savings, be sure to enter Adam in the referral box at checkout. That's code Adam for special savings only at LegalZoom.com, where life meets legal.
All right, Chris, you know a lot of musicians and artists and stuff like that. Who do you know that is unable to make a living that is sort of sober and possesses some talent and went at it with some diligence?
Well, I mean, this, I don't know. You know, it depends. I would hate to call somebody's efforts a failed effort, you know, and because I've been there. I was a failure in my own mind. So I'm not trying to dodge the question. I just don't know if I'm quite qualified to answer it yet, because I'm just starting to get out of the funk. You know, I'm just starting to get out of that feeling myself. So it's like, I think if I hadn't moved here and I hadn't been married to who I was married to, I would have been that story. There's no question about it.
Everybody would talk about their friend Chris, who, you know, was very talented in music, but couldn't quite make it.
Yeah, well,
as a cautionary tale.
That's right. Don't be like Chris.
But are all those years you think of as failure years, weren't they just sort of learning years or growing years
anymore,
or whatever?
Right, you're exactly. They're
well,
not
now
anymore.
They've been converted into plying your trade or working it out or getting reps or paying your dues or whatever it is.
Which brings me to a kind of an aside on this, but I still think it's pertinent to the question is, I think to make it in this creative field, from my perspective and from the conversations I've had with people that I admire, you have to be able to see the end of the road, not know what's going over that road, and say, the hell with it. I'm going over the cliff, and like staring that death of the dream in the eye and say, if I'm going to go over the cliff, I don't give a shit. And you put yourself on the line. And it seems to me when you put that pressure on yourself and on whatever it is that controls things, you'll get a line. You'll get a break. You'll get like, it might just be a little teeny line that gives you a little bit more road. Don't you agree with that? Like, I imagine in your career, you had to have had like those moments where it was like, this isn't working. Shit, I imagine everybody here, right? I mean, am I way off base?
No,
it's just
not
a
at
theory
all.
I'm starting to come up with. You
I know what you're talking about.
You know, yeah, right.
Well, I had this weird, sad moment the other night, actually, because I was careers and whatnot. I have a general thought that everyone I know who had some talent and some ability and who pursued it and stuck with it and whatever and didn't have a serious situation with their work and their ethic and applying their work and stuff like that. It all kind of worked out for them. But I also had this sort of sobering moment thinking about tequila, which is a weird thing. There was a guy I went to the Groundlings with. And, you know, if you hang around long enough, you'll get to see all the people or many of the people that you thought had the world by the tail, and it turns out the years wear on and maybe didn't have the world by the tail. Now, the thing about the aforementioned Jimmy Kimmel is he does have the world by the tail now, but nobody thought he had the world by the tail when he was 26.
Quite the opposite.
Sure. It's quite the opposite. But there was a guy who I was in the Groundlings with, in an advanced class with. His name was Vic Wilson. And he was this good-looking dude. We're looking at him now. He was a good-looking dude, and he was like kind of buff and all-American and everything. And he was funny as shit and talented as shit. You know, you don't meet too many of those guys who are right. really all-American good looks and then super talented, did all the voices and did everything. So, and he was also a guy who was really good without even trying. And
I know a dude like that now, and he's like, the sky's the limit for
don't,
you.
Don't embarrass me. But we get it. You know, thanks. So. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. That's why I said a guy.
So I was drinking a little tequila the other night, and I was thinking to myself, oh, I remember so many years ago, I went over to Vic's, like, little apartment behind Melrose on the west side, and we just sat on it. I was thinking about those things you used to do, like, put a couple folding chairs out on his front lawn of his apartment, got a bottle of tequila. I got there like 5 in the afternoon, and we just sat there and drank tequila like all night. Like at some point, he barbecued something, and we went back in, and we went back
out. That's what you do.
Onto the lawn, and we just sat there looking at people walking past and talking, and the stuff that my kids will never do, that weird just sort of free fun, no one had any money. And but it was always a memory, and every time I take a sip of tequila, I always think, I remember me and Vic Wilson out on the lawn, some apartment. Now, I got kicked out of the Groundlings. He went on to become a Groundling because he was really good, and I wasn't as good as he was. And I always kind of remember thinking, well, there goes good-looking Vic, and good-looking, he had the best-looking girlfriend, and he was all-American, but he's super talented. And that's why, you know, the Groundlings not moving you into the Sunday company and then into the Groundlings company because you're good-looking. They'll do it because you're super talented.
Right.
And he can join the pantheon of the Will Ferrells and everyone else that went in there. And so on Sunday night, I found myself sitting around my house, and I had some Mexican food. I had a little margarita there, and I said, I was thinking of sipping that tequila with Vic. And so I just went to the computer to go, like, I wonder what Vic's... I know he did some voiceover work, and he was in the business, and he worked in the business, and he could write, and so on and so forth. It was me on the computer.
Googling.
God, his name wasn't Victor.
V-I-C.
And I jumped on, and it was like, oh, Vic Wilson, dead, 2015.
Ooh.
And I was like,
no.
I was like, what? And then I just started looking around. The Groundlings are getting a memorial service, and they're raising money for whatever, and I was like, he's dead? Like, the most virile, strongest, like, good-looking, super talented guy. And we didn't keep in touch, although I would call us friends, even if we didn't stay close. I just wanted to go find out what he was up to, and he's been dead for over 3 years now.
Sad.
Yeah, and I didn't say how he died or what happened or what any of the official particulars. But if you hang around long enough, you'll see people go up, you see people go down, you see these people you think have everything going for them, and then not only have they been dead, but they didn't die 3 weeks ago. They've been dead for 3.5 years. Yeah. Like, it's just gone. Turn the page. Like, it's sad, weird, and it kind of makes you realize you got to make some hay while the sun is shining.
Yeah. No question about it.
And things turn around pretty quick, but always impressed me. It's just super talented, super funny, super nice. And super, like, just sort of conventionally handsome, and then just, he's gone. And I have no idea what became of him.
What did he amount to, like that we career-wise?
You can pull up his IMDb or whatever, and those guys, and it'll tell you.
Of course, he was in Romeo and Michelle. We all know this.
Yeah. And
I say that as a big fan of
him. He did a lot. He would do a lot of character parts and show up in sitcoms and do a lot of voiceover stuff and write a lot of stuff and do stuff like that.
He was one of the voices. Remember that crazy Japanese game show where, like, they dubbed it in English and it was on Spike or whatever, and people would, like, go over, like, a river or a lake or something and be knocked down. It became a knockout or whatever.
Wipeout.
Wipeout, yes. Anyway, he was one of the dubbed voices of one of the commentators.
Random.
Yeah.
It became like a comedy thing. Like, it was, in Japan, it was a game show. It became kind of a sportsy commentating kind of thing.
Right. So there was some point in my life where I was going, Jesus Christ, that guy's going off to become a Groundlings member, mm-hmm. and I'm going back to North Hollywood to go in a shitty apartment. And then at some point in his life where he was like, oh, that guy's on the Man Show, and I'm doing voiceovers for a Japanese game show. Now there's like, I'm sitting in my living room, and he's gone. Mm-hmm. Point in my life and what was his life. Like, you never know where this shit's heading.
We would watch that show in the booth at Loveline because it's a show you could watch with the sound off. You know, so right. be falling into a lake. It's hilarious. You know, just watching while the show's going on.
Yeah, it makes you think, right? Well, doesn't that, there seems to be no rhyme or reason to stuff like that sometimes. You know, it's just like some people get lucky, some people don't. And I mean, you can talk in the life arc and in the career arc. You know, it's like, isn't there some luck to it, don't you feel? Like, oh, you're in the room.
If you're Vic Wilson, there's luck with everything. My argument against luck is go make your own luck.
Like,
I don't want to convince my kids they're lucky or unlucky. Just go get some. Neither here nor there.
I completely agree.
Move forward. Yeah. And if you get unlucky, like a forklift runs you over,
or
a podcaster's making fun of you, and a forklift runs you over, that is unlucky.
Yeah.
Now let's overcompensate and get back to it. Let's get some of that,
move some dice.
Of that luck back. All right, so does anyone know anyone that wasn't able to move in a facility that they wanted to work in, but they couldn't?
Yes.
And they had some ability.
As soon as you started describing it, I knew the exact friend of mine who is that person embodies exactly what you're talking about. And similar to Vic, this is a guy who I think had everything going for him in this respect, but he was going into a competitive industry. My friend, I won't name him, my good buddy from college, I went to his wedding, he went to my wedding, we're good friends, is a very talented writer. He studied screenwriting in college, was really good at it, but that's a competitive industry. That's hard to break into. And he's probably written, I'm going to estimate over the course of his adult life, 40 scripts. What it could be, if it was 60, it's 60.
But he can't do movies.
I think he's written 60 feature-length scripts. The guy's dedicated his life to writing, as far as I know.
Right.
And I've read some of his stuff, and it's good, but it just for whatever reason.
I can't write I'm in the industry, and I can't write a movie.
Yeah. So imagine.
But my caveat is he has to work in an alcove or an offshoot of, writing screenplays is tough.
Right.
But being a writer for an online column or some version of writing, that's what I'm saying.
Yes, he has treaded water in various other aspects of the industry, sort of self-made kind of stuff. But yeah, the dream was to be a screenwriter, and he was good, but it just never clicked.
I don't know. But I'm not talking about the dream. I'm talking about working in some capacity in that field, not a screenwriter, a writer, even if it's for an online publication. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sort of.
Like, my thing was, I didn't need to be a radio host. I needed to just work in this collective artistic field.
Okay, maybe I misunderstood. I thought you were asking about the people in our lives.
That's a horrible question, because nobody has done that.
Huh?
I mean, no one's a rock star.
Right.
Or, his dream was to be in Led Zeppelin or to play. So if your dream is to play shortstop for the Yankees, forget it.
Right.
It's never going to happen.
That was my other thing.
If your dream is to be employed by MLB somehow in some capacity where you work for the front office or whatever, who hasn't been able to achieve that?
My other thought was, in high school, I knew plenty of guys who were at least as good athletes as Tom Brady, if not a little better, and he had whatever that was, the work ethic, the X factor, whatever it was, that put him over, and he's Tom Brady, and these guys are just regular dudes.
Is your friend, what would he call himself if he said, what do you do for a living?
Unlucky.
Yeah, producer, I guess? I guess, I don't know.
All right, but he's in the industry.
Yeah, he does.
He just doesn't write.
Yes, he employs himself in the industry.
But that's not, remember I was saying, working at Costco or whatever it was. He's working in the industry. Yeah. He just can't be a screenwriter.
Yeah, that's exactly why I wasn't able to really come up with a name either, because I thought, well, I know a lot of people who have spent the last 20 plus years trying to be a successful actor, that's their only job. And in the past few years, they've moved off into editing or they're in, production. And so it is kind of a little bit different.
Yeah, I will call that, being a rock band, being an actor, writing screenplays, low percentage. Working somewhere in that industry, I would say mission accomplished. Yeah. Maybe not ultimate mission accomplished, but one is a dream and the other sort of a goal. Yes, Dawson.
I think every radio guy who had been an overnight jock his entire career and never got that 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. or the afternoon drive or the morning slot, I think I knew a ton of those guys who were approaching 60 years old and gave their entire lives to radio, but were still only on the air from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m.
But if I know they weren't that good. I know radio, at least they weren't bitter.
Right. Well, they're only no drug or alcohol problems, obviously.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, and so my argument to them, it was the same argument I gave to Philip the Juggler. Sadly, he passed too early as well, which is you never made it onto a sitcom and you never made it to Broadway. You happen to make a living not working. You never worked. You never had a job. People have jobs. They're roofers and waitresses and bartenders, and they work at, you know, at libraries and the DMV and airport security and drive forklifts and get run over by coworkers. You had a radio job. You had a juggling job. Your friend has a producing job or whatever.
He's on music licensing. He's other things in the industry.
Whatever it is, they've still made it because the expectation of playing shortstop, that's insane. But the idea of being involved with an organization that does sports, you've done it.
Well, and not being from here, it's easier to hit the watermark by saying where you're from, would those people consider you to have made it? And the answer is usually yes, if you're working in the industry.
But don't ask the Corollas. So, Chris, you've made it. That's what I'm saying.
That's a long way around to say congratulations.
Well, you know, and the game's never over for your buddy, is it? Because
that's the other thing.
You know, when do you end that judgment would be my aside to that is like, what about the people who die and then their work becomes hugely recognized?
The Van Goghs. Mm.
You know what I mean? What are they?
Huh?
You know, in life.
Spaceballs 4, right. Long after your friend has passed away, the script you wrote in 97.
Spaceballs 4.
Could be discovered.
You might have just answered your other question there, too, Adam. Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks.
Mm. Yes.
Your other question from
Steve
earlier.
Martin.
Yeah, he is.
I think everybody would look up to that guy.
That's a good point.
He is. He's a little chewy, but yeah. Yeah. You know, the thing that I found very interesting about Mel Brooks is I interviewed him for a little podcast I do called Take an E that you guys can check out at amcarolla.com there. I went to his office. I interviewed him. I'd never met him before. And he came in at age 91 and a half. And I don't think he had any idea who I was. I was just some guy I wanted to interview him. And he came in and he was fresh off doing like a one-man show, and it was like, you know, the world according to Mel Brooks or something, or Jackie Mason or whatever it was, but it was Mel Brooks. And so I sat down like at his desk, and we were getting ready to interview him, and he was in his 90s, and he got out like a clipping from a newspaper that could have been like the Newport Shipping News or something, and he was like, Mel Brooks is excellent in his one man show, and he's like, "Well, look at that! Look at what? Hey, nobody guy I've never met before. Look at this! Look at this! They called it riveting, you know." And it's like, wow. I'm like, "You're 92.
Yeah.
You're Mel Brooks.
Cares.
You don't know who I am. You don't need my validation for this newspaper clipping that your secretary got from the paper that's not even near here. Oh yes, he did.
Oh yes,
he needed it. And I'm like, you don't need it." You're Mel Brooks. That's us. Me, picture me sitting in his office looking at his military uniform from World War II. But he really needed me to understand that this one-man show that he did a few weeks ago was well-received.
By whoever.
By whomever. It's interesting.
That's
right?
Why he's still standing in that picture.
And I'm sitting there looking for a place to die.
He's still hungry, man. He's still hungry.
Well, he just did the TCM Festival over the spring, which he does every year, and showed the producers. It was amazing. And he couldn't stay all weekend, he announced, because he had a gig in Vegas. Yeah. And he is well into his 90s.
It's amazing.
God love it.
What a man.
All right. All of This Life, it's the records available right now on all the platforms. And you can go to the site, therecordcompany.net. Chris, thank you very much for coming in here.
Thank you for having me.
And since you're local, you can come back whenever you want.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having me.
We shall be here. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with some news right after this.
Adam and Drew, back together again.
Hey, man.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, man. Why should people listen to us every single day, Drew?
Because they complain that we're not around anymore, and where are you? Won't you guys come back? And lo and behold, we've been back the whole time. They need to listen to us every day.
And I think the world needs a nice dose of us.
Yes, it's that time.
Every day.
Yep, every
day. Podcast One and
Apple. It's healthy. It's healthy. It'll improve your soul.
Thank you.
Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew Pinsky, getting it on 5 days a week. The Adam and Drew Show, weekdays on Carolla Digital and Podcast One.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Eat news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
Let me jump in here with a little piece of advice. Software advice. Picking software for your
software
business.
Software advice from the Ace Man.
That's, no one knows software like the Ace Man.
Regular Leo Laporte.
Hardware, but mostly software. Mm-hmm. Software advice has done all the research for you. Their team of advisors can point you in the right direction right away, and they can do it for free. Just go to softwareadvice.com/Adam. Answer a few short questions about your business. Then connect with an advisor to discuss the best software option for your need. 10 minutes or less, no time. You're running a business. You want the right advice. You got to get the right advice. You got to get software advice. Whether you're in the medical profession or construction manager or HR pro, you name it, software advice will save you time and help you make an informed decision. Use the best. Use software advice, right, Dawson?
End the software struggle today. Go to softwareadvice.com/Adam to get started. That's softwareadvice.com/Adam to connect with an advisor for free. Softwareadvice.com/Adam.
All right, let's do it, Gina.
All right. Well, LeBron James may be heading to L.A. to play for the Lakers, but he hasn't forgot about his hometown. On Monday, the I Promise School opened up in Akron, Ohio. It focuses on at-risk third and fourth graders. The school was created through a partnership between LeBron James Family Foundation and Akron Public Schools. When he was in fourth grade, he was absent more than 80 days due to his turbulent family life. Couldn't always get across town. Couldn't get the bus to go to work, to go to school. I think comes from a family with a single mom.
What?
Yep. The school, now here's a couple of things that make this school sort of unique. It has long hours. It runs from 9 to 5, a longer school year than a typical public school. Students will also be provided meals during the day. Meanwhile, children qualify for the program based on socioeconomic and performance factors and have been promised full tuition to the University of Akron by James upon completion of the program.
Is it a charter school? What is this?
Private school, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, he founded can't be public, it. Yeah.
The we need this school choice. Yeah, just the hours. So, for instance, a lot of these charter schools or private schools or whatever you want to call them schools, they will stick around because if you got a single mom, she's working and you're off at 3 or 2:45 and she comes home at 6, mm-hmm. How's that?
What are you going to do?
How's that going to work?
A lot of hours get in trouble.
Yeah. So, I'm all for this. And,
you're going to be fighting to get in here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting that you think of like whatever research went into picking third and fourth grade. You know, how fragile a time of, you know, being 9 and 10 is. Is that when things start to go wrong? Is that the fork in
probably
the road?
Probably identified as being a pivot point for risk youth.
Yeah. I told Dumbo Pussy Dr. Drew to ask Barbara Boxer.
Just his name. His name's,
it's just Dr. Drew.
Just Dr. Drew. Huh? Don't use his full name on
that. Was she a former senator?
Barbara Boxer, senator.
Yeah. He said, what question you want me to ask? I said, how about charter schools? Why are you so against school choice? It's competition. It's good. It's basically what you do is you go, hey, well, first off, who can't do things better than the government? Number one. Number two, doesn't competition just kind of help everything? Like right now, the government has the corner market, the market cornered when it comes to education. There's no competition. Mm-hmm. So they get tenured teachers and they can't fire anybody and they can't get rid of bad teachers and they don't have to perform and they still get money. And each school system, it's, I don't know, LA Unified is 12 or 13 or whatever, $1,000 per student. I like a world where somebody goes, all right, how much is it per student at your school, right, wherever it is? It's higher in Baltimore. It's higher in New York. It's lower in Utah. But whatever it is, you go, all right, it's 13 grand a kid. Okay, we're not getting that much bang for our $12,000 or $13,000 a buck per kid. Mm-hmm. Why don't we let these guys compete with you? Right. And they live in a world where their teachers aren't in a union. They fire teachers who aren't performing. If the teachers don't want to, the teachers can stay late, can do weekend. They can do whatever they want. There's no union. Well, anything. And they'll shit can your ass if you're a bad student. And guess what happens? It raises the game, but it also raises the public school's game, too, because now they have to compete.
Like we said, people fight to get into those schools. You see the documentary, Waiting for Superman?
Right.
Yes.
At the end, a heartbreaking scene where they're waiting on the lottery to get into the good school, to receive the permission to apply.
Right.
Yeah, and this is in correlation, they're working with Akron Public Schools. Chris says it is a public school, but I'm a little confused.
Well,
as
here's
to how
the
that's
deal.
Gonna work.
A charter school, people mistake for a private school sometimes, but a charter school is a public school. It's basically just saying in Akron, Ohio, or Baltimore, or LA, what do you guys pay per student for a failing system? Okay, give these guys that money per student, or give them $1,000 less a student and let them try. And surprise, surprise, they tend to do better.
Right.
And that's why there's a line of single poor black mamas trying to shove their kids into those things, because the other Baltimore system is not working. Now, you claim to love kids, but you're against this system vehemently.
So which is it?
Well, what it is you're in with the teachers' unions. Your boss, if you're Barbara Boxer, your boss is the teachers' union, not the kids. So you got to make them happy. And the teachers' union, it'd be like me saying, you know what? We can't chance any other podcast. Too dangerous. Too dangerous for the
There's
listener.
There's already too many.
Oh, too many. There's just going to be this one. There's going to be this one. And somebody goes, yeah, but wouldn't people enjoy more if they... No, no.
No.
I'm not playing fast and loose with the history of the podcasting, with the ears of my constituency.
It's dangerous thinking.
Yeah, it's dangerous thinking. No, you make sure everyone listens to me. And, oh, while I'm making my announcement, we're going to 2.5 days a week. Because who gives a shit?
I love everything I'm hearing.
Why would we have to compete? Why does anyone have to compete? Of course, it brings out the worst in everyone. But former senator of California, Barbara Boxer, her and her daughter were on. We'll see what see if she likes that voucher system.
All right, here we go. Yeah, this is audio from the Dr. Drew podcast. It's going to air soon.
And what's wrong with school vouchers? He wants to know. Why not school vouchers? If people want to use the free market.
Oh, the problem, I'll tell you the problem with it. It's taxpayer money, and it's going to schools, away from schools. It's money taking out of schools where 95% of the children in the country go. I have no problem with charters, but I think to take people out to private school, it's taxpayers' funding that's going there, and I think that's wrong.
I would just say to Adam, update your spiel, dude.
Well, that's
like a 10-12 year old debate, really.
The voucher system.
I never stopped him.
Like,
you know, it's funny that
she went to Redwood High in Marin County. Update my spiel. I don't know. The schools are getting worse. Mm. The kids are failing more. Mm. And yes, it's something that gets discussed because there should be a change. Her thing is like, that's taxpayer money. It's taxpayer money now. It goes to the kids, and they don't get a good education. So taxpayers, as someone who pays taxes, I would be happy to take my taxpayer money, attach it to a kid, and put them in a place where they got a better education. It would help me later on in life when those kids stayed out of prison and became taxpayers themselves.
Ultimately. Yeah.
At least Barbara tried to answer the question.
She answered a pretty interesting way. Her dumbo daughter had nothing. Update your spiel.
Yeah, she sucked.
Why is caring about kids' education a spiel? Yeah. I just love that. Anyway, she went to Marin, one of the richest cities or areas in California, maybe the world. She went to Redwood High in Marin County. So look, if you live in Marin County and you go to Redwood High, you do not need a charter school. But if you're in certain parts of Cleveland or Baltimore or LA, it'd be nice to have that option.
True.
That's all. I don't know who, but you have to ask yourself, why is anybody against this?
When were options ever a bad thing?
I don't know. It's just competition.
Competition creates a better marketplace.
So why would you be against it? Now, if you're intellectually honest, you take money from the unions, of the school unions, so they don't want any competition. If they were intellectually honest, they'd discuss it as well. It's this weird argument. It was like, oh, no, this will never work. This is too dangerous. We're not going to play with our kids' future. What do you think you're doing in Baltimore when they go to the schools?
Right.
This notion of like we're pulling them out of something that's tried and true and works every time, and we're putting them into this big question mark.
Yeah,
it's no, you're pulling them out of something that's broken. It doesn't work. Your thing is could we get an extra couple of dollars to throw at this thing that's never going to work? My answer is let's get a little more competition going and let the kids figure it out. Let the moms. I bet the moms have a pretty good idea.
Yeah, the kids' best interest at heart.
Yes.
Almost all the time.
You're a product of LAUSD.
Fucking daughter.
Yeah.
Blah.
The best in the business.
Yeah. Although, I think North Hollywood High, it's funny because I was talking to someone. North Hollywood High does pretty well, but it's a lot like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where they just had the one dude. We bring in like six Indian kids.
Yeah, raise that curve.
They win the math competitions and the academic decathlons and stuff, but then the rest are just dumbos.
Yeah, I think I'm 99% sure that almost every night on the Tim Conway Jr. show, he would say, if you want your child's spirit to be broken, put them in LAUSD.
I agree. Although, if you find out,
I'm Gina Grad, LAUSD.
You know, it'd be fun, Max Matt, if you can find out, like, North Hollywood High's last academic decathlon winners or something. See if you find a guy's name, Mike Jones or John Robinson or any of those names in there. I think you'll see a lot of long Indian names in there. So it's we got a handful of ringers.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe they want to get in on Jeopardy while they can, while Alex is still there, because UpRocks reports that Alex Trebek's Jeopardy contract is up in 2020, and it sounds like he's ready to move on from the show.
He takes himself a little too seriously.
But that's what makes it so awesome.
That was one of the best jokes on the Celebrity Jeopardy on SNL. Look at you, Trebek. You think you got all the answers sitting there. You got the cards. I know you do. Like, he seems so authoritative and knowledgeable, but he knows the answers.
Well,
I'm
so sorry.
We do have this weird thing, I remember Michael Chiklis, like, when he was the commish, like, hey, the commish, don't mess with you. And the chick was like, hey, back it off. And it's like all 5 foot nothing of his lard ass. And it was like that. You play that on TV, Trebek, if you just played, you know, King Neptune for 25 years, eventually you just expect to walk into a Red Lobster and just have people move aside. You know what I mean? Like, I want a booth. Sorry, you can't have, where's my booth?
Checking my trident.
Hold my staff.
Bang, bang.
Yeah,
like James Gandolfini at the height of his career.
Yeah, I just think it has to. It's like human whatever. He's somehow better than all of us because he knows everything.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you know who this is, but they asked who he thinks his replacement should be.
Yes, and I saw this.
Yeah, he says...
Kings announcer.
Alex Faust, 29-year-old broadcaster who replaced Jim Miller on the LA Kings games.
And then he had to do this one, which everyone has to do. It's like, who should replace me for this podcast? Let's see, the Kings announcer, that guy, young white guy. Oh, shit, black guy, black woman, black woman, black woman, black woman, black woman.
Holly Berry.
Yeah, because if I don't spit out a black woman, it's going to be bad.
He was asked who the female host could be, if that's the direction they go. He said CNN contributor Laura Coates.
Yeah.
So he's woman been hosting since 1984. He had brain surgery earlier this year. Yeah. They put the production on hiatus, so he'll probably be done in a year and a half. Enjoy the rest of his retirement.
I know people want to jump into blessing, but blessing or curse, depending on what's in the tank, you know what I mean? Like, that's just what you do. I don't know. Maybe he had some books he wanted to write or some movies he wanted to produce, or maybe it's just a ball of creativity and this was his thing. Like,
maybe he was a game show host before Jeopardy.
Yeah, maybe he's got nothing to offer, but... I still, do we have a picture of North Hollywood High's Olympic decathlon team?
This is one of their academic teams. Go ahead, put it up, Kalen.
Oh, wow.
Don't have any names, but...
Awful lot of honkies in here.
They've got a few brothers in there, but some Indians and some Asians and some... All right, they're in Cal. That's a nice mixed bag.
Yeah, that's a good picture.
All right, no one's getting laid, but
looks like the cast of 13 Reasons Why.
United Colors.
All right. All right. What else do we got?
Well, Sony is now the owner of the music publishing company once controlled by Michael Jackson. Variety reports that as part of its quarterly earnings report, the global entertainment and electronics giant reported they'd purchased the remaining 25% stake in EMI, which Jackson controversially acquired in the mid-80s. The deal, remember, he outbid Paul McCartney.
And this Yoko. Caused, they came together. They were enemies at that point. Enemies, you know, they were still, you know.
Frenemies. Yeah. This caused a permanent chill between them. And remember, they collaborated on The Girl Is Mine.
Oh, didn't. I thought McCartney gave him advice to, like, own your stuff or something, which was part of the lore.
That's the story, is that he was like, music publishing, that's where you're going to make some money. Like, you buy up the rights to songs.
I want
to
own my stuff. I'll own your
Jackson
stuff.
Jackson was like, oh, that's a good idea, yeah. Paul. And then a couple of years later, he bought all the Beatles stuff.
Yeah.
And after decades of deals, the music publishing firm controls the copyrights to songs written by Lennon McCartney, Jackson, Marvin Gaye, Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, Carole King, Queen, Rolling Stones. They even own the rights to Over the Rainbow and other standards. Yeah, it's a hot jam.
It's a Tool tune.
You don't keep seeing what else is on.
I kind of like the song.
You know, I don't like to talk about myself. Say what you want, but don't. And I'll let this play underneath.
Yeah.
But I had this. I wouldn't say it's exactly the same, but it's as close as we're ever going to get. When I did the Toyota Grand Prix,
pre-chorus.
In the year I won it as a celebrity, there was a brother, last name Hill. I'm trying to think of his first name. He was on like CSI or something. One of those shows I never watched where they just have the dude on there. And we were touring the Children's Hospital, which you do before the race, a couple days, going to like the Long Beach Children's Hospital. And what was this guy Hill's name?
Hill Harper.
Hill Harper. Oh, Hill was his friend. Hill Harper. And nice guy. But I kind of watched, it was his first year. It was like my third year. And it seemed during qualifying and stuff. And he was like a mid-pack dude. And he said to me, but he was very competitive. A lot of actors. Actors, some of the most competitive people in the world. And he said to me, when we were walking through the halls of the kids' hospital, he said, what's it going to take? Like, how do I get up front? What do I got to do? You've done this before. Killed an ant. How's this going to work? And I kind of looked at him and I was like, well, I'm not in the business of handing out tips to competitors.
Don't do it.
But I got you as a mid-packer. So I said to him, all right, here's the key.
He wasn't a backpacker. He was a mid-packer.
He was a mid-packer, but he wasn't a front packer. Gotcha. Or a fudge packer, like the Ace Man. So, I said, you know, when you're going down that back straight there, you know, brake late, there's a lot of tire. The drifter guys would get out there and do the drifting exhibition where they're like burning rubber.
Yeah.
Smoke
sexy.
Flying out everywhere. And that would be the corner they would do it on, those two corners. And I would say to them, a lot of rubber on the asphalt that the drifter guys laid down earlier the day, and it's sticky. And so you can brake late. You can get, when everyone else is letting off and downshifting and braking and setting up for that turn, you stay on that throttle for another couple seconds and you brake hard and turn in and the grip will be there because of the rubber that's on the road. And I gave him a few other little tips. I don't know if you find that race, Max or Pat, you'll see at some point. I probably shouldn't have said anything. Then there was a bunch of accidents and a bunch of yellow flags and a bunch of this and a bunch of that. And at some point, I was in the lead, and there's like 2.5 laps left, and we're coming out of turn 5 into turn 6 or something, and I was like, I think I got this race won, and as I was setting up for this turn, I felt like a tap on the back of my car. My car got like momentarily like a little bit loose, and I looked up, and the rear view, and Hill Harper, right there. And I was like, son of a bitch. There's one guy I gave all this great advice to. And the thing that's funny is where he tapped me was on the corner leading into that long straightaway where I gave him the whole talk about all the rubber and braking late and everything else. And I just remember going, shit. Now, it's just people got in accidents. Shit happened. He improved. Whatever it was. But the guy I gave all the advice to was now up my ass. And he knew everything I told him to do. And now I had two laps or three laps to try to stave off this guy. So, moral of the story? No advice to anybody. Never talk to anyone. Especially in children's hospitals.
Yeah. The last place.
It's bittersweet, though, because we found someone who actually took your advice.
Yes, right, the one guy.
Yeah. See what happened?
He bested you.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, so I guess McCartney told Jackson to publish and own publishing, and that he did, right?
He came for him.
Yeah. All right, I'll tell you guys about Geico. Where is that vid, Max Pana?
I just found it, but we're scrubbing through. We got to find out where it was in the race.
Somewhere around lap 7, 8, something after long. It's into it a little bit, but it's funny. He just like, he almost knocked me into the wall. Like the car got, I was like, where is this guy? Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you pick up the milk and you drop off the dry cleaning? How about you save hundreds of dollars to your car insurance and you don't have to go anywhere? You just go over to your computer at geico.com, 15 minutes. You could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that extra money, put it in your pocket, get some insurance. Don't do what Hill Harper did to me. Once you got that insurance, I'm going to make contact with other people. You go to geico.com, 15 minutes. You could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance at geico.com. All right, we got another story here.
Sure.
Well, one more.
All right. People Magazine reports that Lindsay Lohan is on the comeback trail, courtesy of MTV. The network purchased her reality series called Lohan Beach Club. It focuses on a Greek resort that bears her name. The press release stated, quote, Lohan Beach Club offers viewers VIP access to how a young, successful entrepreneur runs her empire while striving to rise above the temptations the Mykonos nightlife scene has to offer. And filming...
So it's going to be her not partying?
Yeah.
Wow.
Film just started, coincided with first daughter Tiffany Trump visiting Lohan's resort. Here's just a really quick little promo clip.
Take a look at that. I've been into, she has a gay brother, and I've been watching his reality show on MTV 3, Low-Handed Fruit, for a while now and enjoying it.
Today of all days.
Yeah, that's good. Well, there was also a story that came out that there was two girls who Instagrammed, their waitresses or whatever at the club, and they wore these little short satin robes, and one was in white high heels, and one was in nude high heels, and everyone's saying, oh, you're so great, this is going to be so great. And Lohan commented something like, wear the standard uniform, fix the shoes, or you're fired. So she's being a real Leona Helmsley.
Wow. She's going to be great. All right, we got it. Who she had sex with?
I lost my sight when I was 14 years old, so.
Huh? She lost her sight?
I didn't know that about this breaking.
That was probably an ad playing on another window. We're silencing that. Here we go.
It's not that great. It's just a little 15-second snippet.
Pack your bags, MTV. We're going to Mykonos. I've joined the MTV family, and I'm Lindsay Lohan.
It was 11 tags.
Get ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It all feels sort of sad to me, right?
Yeah. I expected her to have a comeback at some point, but I thought it'd be like doing something dramatic or, you know, Mean Girls 2.
As somebody who has toured the Greek islands and specifically avoided Mykonos, this is perfect for Mykonos. This is exactly, this is like the Jersey Shore of Greek islands. So I'm sure in some ways it'll do quite well. It's a party, young party sort of. Look at me.
Wasn't it Lindsay Lohan at one point? Like, didn't she try to get that?
Lohan.
Didn't she try to go? I swear to God, when she hosted SNL, it was Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think she tried to get that gong at one point, and then she got sober.
I'm sure Dr. Drew would tell you that the best way to stay sober is get involved with MTV and buy an island resort.
Very, very good point.
All right. Oh, we have Hill Harper in his...
So this is you going over on CarCast. This is the 2012 Toyota Grand Prix.
Eddie Cibrian.
On Thursday, and Hill Harper came up to me. He's a super competitive guy, but his times weren't that good. Like, he was definitely middle of the pack.
Oh, that's me lapping Eddie Cibrian.
And Hill Harper came up to me, and he said, hey, man, What do I got to do?
Goddamn close he is to me.
Off my lap times, and I remember.
Call Tanner Faust.
I swear to God, I was looking at him. Here's where me and Hill Harper get into it for a second. Hill Harper's driving his ass off here.
He's really giving it his 100% here.
That's me almost getting sideways into
That's him
wall.
Tapping me right before I go to a wall at 80 miles an hour.
Or is that just you getting a little loose?
No, that was him tapping me. You can see the dent.
If anyone ever watches anybody on the freeway who thinks their car's hurt, but it's not hurt, but they got to move it, but they don't move it, but they leave it. These cars beat the fucking shit out of these cars with bumpers hanging everywhere and flat tires and stuff. And guys just put them in reverse and just pull it right out, like push it right out.
I'd be
amazed. Look no further than every police chase. Right?
Yeah.
The guy's running over stuff. Parts are hanging off. He runs over the tack strips. Both tires are bald and
still going.
And then you pass the asshole on the freeway. It's like, we're out of the car. We exchange a little paint. I can't move the car. This is a crime scene. Just fucking do
it.
Get out of there.
By the way, there's something very casual about chewing gum while you're in the middle of a hardcore race. That was cool. You're like George Costanza.
You got to be relaxed.
Yeah.
If you are not relaxed when you're doing things that these endeavors that are sort of high stress endeavors, if you can't relax yourself, you will fail. Yeah. It is a kind of a relaxation thing that you need to try to attempt in any high pressure, whatever. I don't know what the answer is, but if you can get yourself to relax and be loose about it, you will perform better. The one thing about cars is you can't grab and saw and punch and stuff at the wheel. It just never because someone's going to tap you, and you're going to feel the car sliding a little bit. And if you yank it the other way, you'll overcompensate.
Yeah.
So relax. Go ahead, Brian.
I was going to say, speaking of chewing gum and the aforementioned guys I knew in high school who were better athletes than Tom Brady, or at least as good. One of those dudes was playing baseball, caught in a rundown, right? Caught in a pickle. The two guys had him. You know, he's the runner on the base. He's caught in a pickle, back and forth. They got the ball. He's blowing a bubble.
That's awesome.
While being chased down. That's cool under pressure.
Yeah.
That's why it works for UPS today. All right. Should we bring it home?
We'll do it right now. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gist, boy.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Let me tell you about Castrol Edge. Heat, friction, viscosity breakdown. They'll rob your engine from maximum performance. Friction results in a loss of performance of up to 10%. Castrol Edge, engineered with fluid titanium technology, physically transforms to be stronger under pressure. Helps fight friction, delivers maximum levels of performance for your car. Three times, fool! Stronger against viscosity breakdown, leading full synthetic. That would be your Castrol Edge. So go get some of that, would you please? All right. Pasadena Ice House up on stage with Dr. McDreamy, Dr. Drew, August 29th. That's a live show. Then the Moore Theater, September 13th, Historic Moore. You guys have to come out and see that theater. It's beautiful with Adam Ray up on stage. Phoenix Stand Up Live, me and Mike August up there doing basic cable commentary. That's coming up October 6th. And live shows everywhere, Anaheim, Grove. You go to adamcarolla.com and do all that. Pre-order Uppity over at Chassis, and say hi to our friends, Dr. and Mrs. Guinea Pig, Heather Dubrow and her beautiful doctor husband. Check that out on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts as well. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla. Oh, wait a minute. I want to give my guests a plug. Oh, thank you.
Chris Voss.
Yes, Chris Voss. And All of This Life is the name of the record. So, Adam Carolla, Chris Voss, and Gina Grad, and Bald Brian say mahalo.
That's funny.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. August 29th, we're in Pasadena at the Ice House. September 13th, the Moore Theater with Adam Ray. And tickets and info on all of it at adamcarolla.com.